Sangye cho tong su ki cho nama Yamudandu dhagi kya su ki Dhagi jen su ki riso nangi Dho la bhyan che sangye lu parshu
I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha and all sentient beings.
I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha. To benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapparivara Ratna Manda Pulsa Mega Samundra Sapparana Samari. Okay, welcome to the eighth session of Parting from the Four Attachments. Just to review where we've come from, we finished the first line, which is if you have attachment to this life, you're not a Dharma practitioner. And there were two meditations in that line, the meditation of precious human rebirth and the meditation of death and impermanence. And then we started on the second line, which is if you're attached to cyclic existence, you don't have renunciation. And there are two meditations for that line, the faults of cyclic existence and karma. So last week we talked about all the faults of cyclic existence. And so I drew a chart of cyclic existence because there's all these different places in it, and sometimes it can get a little bit confusing because we have the three realms and we have the six realms, and sometimes it's a little bit of a mix-up. So I thought by making a chart it might help some of us to understand it. And we went through that last week. You know, when I lived in Italy, they have a saying there, which is, if the thoroughbreds can't run, you ride the donkey. And that's kind of the situation here, because Lama couldn't teach this class, so he asked me to do it. So when you ride the donkey, it's subject to mistakes. And I made a little mistake last week that I want to correct. Nicole asked about the form realm and the formless realm. She said, well, don't they have subdivisions like the desire realm does? And I said, yes, they do, but I didn't write all of them out because we're not going to talk about them, and it's really not part of the four attachment teaching. And what I said was that there were 17 subdivisions of the formless realm and 4 of the form realm, and that's actually the opposite of what it should be. There's 4 under the formless and 17 under the form. So I wanted to make that correction. The donkey's slow, but it does arrive eventually.
The donkey is good.
Any mistakes are mine. But it doesn't change anything. It's still not an objective. It's not a goal to go to those realms. For the simple reason that it's a detour from where we're headed, which is enlightenment. It's sort of like driving too fast and going in the ditch, and then waiting for the tow truck to pull you out again. It's not where you want to be. So these two realms don't have a lot of suffering while you're there, It's just a big party, basically. But at the end, when your karma is expired and you're on to your next rebirth, there's nowhere to go but down. And that's when the suffering really kicks in for those realms. And in fact, it's said that the suffering of falling from those realms is actually worse than the suffering in the hell realms. Because when those beings are in those realms, they don't have any suffering if they want something to just think about it and it appears. It's just a big party. And when they are about to pass to their next rebirth, they have clairvoyance and they see where they're going, which is down. You can imagine how awful that might be. Plus, their body starts to disintegrate, and they get bad smells, and everybody shuns them, and they're alone with their suffering, knowing they're going to the lower rebirth. And it's really, really terrible. So it's really not a place to aspire to. Basically, you get there by doing really advanced meditations incorrectly. Mm-hmm. So even really advanced meditators have to be careful and do it right. Remember we talked about the very first lines, Drapa Gyaltsen talked about having, you know, pure ethics, pure morality, and pure motivation and all that. You can't just say, oh, well, I'm a Buddhist practitioner, no problem. You have to really pay attention to how you do your practice. And this is one of the things that can happen. So that's a little recap of the three realms and what happens there from last week. Okay? So tonight, we're going to go on to the second meditation, which is about karma. Karma, the word karma has a lot of meanings, but the one that's usually quoted is it means action. But really what it means is the law of cause and effect. If you do this action, you get this result. And action includes body, speech, and mind. So it isn't just what you do with your body, but something you say or what you do with your mind. That's what action means. And it's, of course, a very big topic. And in fact, it's so big that it's said that only a Buddha understands all of it. There are a number of topics. Maybe topic is the wrong word, but anyway. Which only the Buddha can understand. So karma is one of them. Mantra is another one, for example. There are certain subjects that we don't have full knowledge of. Only a Buddha, fully enlightened Buddha, does. However, having said that, we know enough about karma to know basically how it works and how to deal with it. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Okay? Last time we talked about how we've been following Drapa Gyaltsen's Song of Experience, which is his version of the commentary on the Parting from the Four Attachments. But there are also lots of other commentaries that come from a sort of a less mystical point of view and more from a kind of, what would you call it, practical point of view of, you know, lists and things like that. And those commentaries give insight to Drapa Gyaltsen's Song of Experience. So one of the commentaries that does that is Sakyapandita's commentary, which is very, very short. It's interesting. Sakyapandita, of course, great famous Sakya Lama, one of the founders, and he makes some very short but poignant insights into Drapa Gyaltsen's commentary. And he made one on the first line, and now he's going to make another one on the second line. And what he says is this. Up to this point, Jetsun Drapa Gyaltsen has directly shown the faults of the world of existence, while indirectly he has indicated what actions should be taken up and rejected in accordance with the law of cause and result. In other words, karma. So what he's saying is that we need to go further than Drapa Gyaltsen's actual lines, and we need to also go into the law of karma. So he points to that as sort of a hidden meaning in the second line, or the second commentary, actually. the commentary on the second line. And the commentaries that followed historically in the centuries after that followed Sakyapandita's suggestion and made comments about the law of karma. His Eminence Chogyi Trichen Rinpoche says, renunciation means that it's necessary to renounce the creation of causes that inevitably result in suffering. So in other words, bad karma. Of course, we have good karma and bad karma, and we're going to talk about that tonight. Karma isn't just bad. Regarding that, His Eminence Avikrita Rinpoche commented in his commentary on Drapa Gyaltsen, when the Buddha first turned the wheel of Dharma, he taught the Four Noble Truths: suffering, its origin, cessation, and the path. And although we can direct our attention in our practice to what seems like the immediate suffering we face in the present, that's not an end in itself. That approach might help us to be more mindful of the present moment, which we need, but the process of achieving that described by the Buddha isn't about focusing on unpleasant feelings and heavy mental states, actually. In fact, it's supposed to make us feel incredibly blissful. So, Jetsun Drapa Gyaltsen rightly points us to look at the much bigger picture, which is not just memorizing all the different realms and the nasty fates that might await us if we misbehave, but as the consequences of karma that we don't see now and therefore don't take seriously enough. In order that we never have a present moment in a bad destination, we reflect deeply on the extent of suffering as caused in the human condition rather than just what the result is in the human condition from previous karma. This is very practically outlined in the elaborate commentaries on parting from the four attachments, as well as the three appearances teaching of the Lamdre. So just to kind of recap what he's saying there, a lot of times we think about karma as, oh, this is my karma, what I'm getting now, good or bad, because of what I did in the past, which is true. But really, that's not what we should be focusing on. We should be focusing on what are we doing now, what are we creating for the future, where are we going? Because what we did in the past, we did in the past. But what we're doing now will determine where we're going to go, and that's really where we need to pay attention. And also, he says that this is practically outlined in the three appearances teaching of the Lamdre. Well, what is the three appearance teachings of the Lamdre? That's what we studied last summer, the beautiful ornament of the three visions, the three visions he calls the three appearances. And those of you that followed that teaching, you'll remember there was quite extensive discussion in that teaching about all the different kinds of karma and the different ways it manifests and how the results come about and what you get if you do this and what you get if you do that. So if somebody wants to go into detail about that, those teachings are the place to look. But we're going to do sort of a summary tonight just to refresh our memory, or maybe some of us haven't had that previous teaching. From the beautiful ornament of the three visions, there's a summary that we could make here. So, the karmic action of our body, speech, and mind produces three kinds of results. The ripened result, the result similar to the cause, and the result of ownership. So we're going to go through those and explain what that means now. So the first one is the ripened result. So remember, we have positive karma and negative karma. Okay, the ripened result, for example, of a negative karma, if you have the negative action of anger, it results in a rebirth in hell, the hell realm. If you have the action of stinginess, it results in a rebirth in the hungry ghost realm, and so on. Okay, so that's what a ripened result refers to. Similarly, if you have a virtuous action, you get a positive result in a higher realm. So we have the lower realm and the higher realm. Okay, so that's pretty straightforward, ripening result. And that's what a lot of people think of when they think of karma. Unfortunately, karma, or fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know, but it's entered into the English language usage, sometimes accurately and sometimes not. But usually when people say karma, they're talking about, well, you do A and the result is B. But that's only part of it. That's the ripened result. Now, the second one, the result similar to the cause, has two divisions or subdivisions. Experience similar to the cause and action similar to the cause. Experience similar to the cause, for non-virtue, staying with the example of if you kill, then you have a short life, or you have a lot of sickness. So that is an experience which is similar to its cause. You kill, you get killed. Now, it's important, too, to remember that it isn't just one for one, because karma, like virtue, multiplies. That's why they refer to it as the roots of virtue or the roots of karma. It's more accurate to think about multiplying it by 100. So if you create the action of killing somebody, you will be killed 100 times. Same is true for positive karma or action. That's why you should never dismiss something as being small, either good or bad. You shouldn't say, oh, well, it's just a small thing, doesn't matter, doesn't count, it's not important. That's not really the way to think about it. So that's experience similar to the cause. And then for virtue, if you avoid killing or you save lives, you'll have a long, long life, a long, happy life, prosperous, healthy, so on. Action similar to the cause, by having committed non-virtue, for example, you naturally have an enthusiasm for committing non-virtue again in the future, in your future lives, because of the force of mental habituation. So if you kill, then you have the tendency to like to kill and to do it again. You sort of create a momentum by doing it. And then, of course, for virtuous, it's the same, except the opposite. If you refrain from killing, then you will not want to kill in the future. You'll want to kill even less in the future. You know, you expand in the future. So it's action similar to the cause. And then the third one, which is called the result of ownership. Your karma ripens as the outer aspect of the world in which you were born into and where you live. So, for example, if you commit non-virtue, the result is you're born in an unpleasant environment. For example, a place where there's drought or famine or bad weather or something like that. The environment reflects your karma. And vice versa, if you commit virtue, then you're born in a beautiful place, nice weather, nice environment, nice conditions. So that's what's called the result of ownership. Plus, if you complement your virtuous action with what are called the three special methods, then that becomes the cause for liberation and enlightenment. Now, what are the three special methods you want to know, right? The first one is the preliminary, which is setting your motivation of the enlightenment thought, or what's called bodhicitta. In fact, that's what we do every time we do a practice, refuge in bodhicitta. So the motivation that you set before you do an action has a tremendous impact on the result of the action. So that's the first special method. The second special method is when you do the main practice of whatever practice you're doing, whether it's saying mantras or circumambulation or practicing generosity, whatever the practice is, you want to seal the practice with emptiness. Now, we're going to talk about emptiness in the fourth line of parting from the four attachments. But basically what that means is when you do your practice, you want to have in mind about the emptiness of, say, for example, I'm doing the practice of generosity. Okay, you want to seal that practice by remembering that I'm not inherently existent. My ego doesn't really exist. It's just an appearance. The object that I'm giving and my generosity doesn't inherently exist. And the receiver of the generosity doesn't inherently exist. They're all sealed with emptiness. By doing that, that's the second special method. So whatever practice you do, you always want to seal it with emptiness, or shunyata, or whatever word you want to use, realizing that words are just labels, of course. And we're going to go into some more detail about that later, okay? And then the third special method is dedicating the merit at the end of the practice. And we do that every time, too. So if you do those three special methods when you're doing whatever activity you're doing, then you create the cause for enlightenment. Otherwise, generosity is fine, but it's not necessarily creating the result that you want. If you say, well, I don't want these socks anymore, I'm going to give them to charity, that's fine, but it's not really creating the cause of enlightenment unless you do the special methods. For example. Okay? So that's a brief, very brief, discussion of karma and the components of it and how it works generally. Nörchen Kunga Zangpo, who's one of the great masters that wrote a commentary in the 16th century, said, "Therefore, for the sake of producing the realization of the thought of renunciation, the faults of the world of existence are explained. But additionally, the law of karma, which causes you to be born in samsara, is considered. And since you are ignorant of which deeds to perform and which deeds to reject, you may carelessly indulge in non-virtuous actions. In order to know what is to be accepted and what is to be rejected, in accordance with the principles of cause and effect, the law of karma is taught." Obviously, we have some good karma, a lot of good karma, we wouldn't even be hearing these teachings. On the other hand, we're not enlightened yet, at least some of us aren't. So we didn't get it perfect yet. So we need to kind of fine-tune our game plan here, and that's what we're going to go through here. Is understanding, okay, we've done a good job, but we need to, you know, refine it. His Holiness the 42nd Sakyatrizin said, "There's always so much suffering in the lower realms, the hell realm, the hungry ghost realm, and the animal realm, that we might think that there's a mixture of happiness and suffering in the higher realms. We might think that sometimes there's happiness and sometimes there's suffering, but this is due to a lack of careful examination of samsara. If we examine carefully, samsara has no happiness. Samsara is full of suffering. And as such, the higher realms are not worthy of any attachment either. Thus, we need to renounce all of samsara completely. And for this, we need to know about the suffering of samsara and also the law of karma. Why are we here in samsara? The fact that we are here in samsara is not due to outside forces. Instead, it's the result of our own deeds. It's our own good deeds and bad deeds that determine where we will go. If we do good deeds, we'll be born in the higher realms. If we do bad deeds, we'll fall down in the lower realms. But even if we're born in the higher realms, it's not permanent. And there's suffering in the higher realms too. Once we are born there, we will fall down into the lower realms. Therefore, the whole of samsara, be it higher realms or lower realms, is not worthy of attachment. Hence, we need to renounce it totally. Lama Jampataye said, at this point, although we may have engaged to some extent with the Dharma, we may still be mistaking it as a means to some temporary improvement, whether a more refined state of consciousness or a higher rebirth. To overcome such a dilution of the Dharma and its purpose requires that we analyze all the states of samsara available to us, from the top, the realm of the gods, to the bottom, the hell realms, and everywhere in between, samsara is suffering. And what brings about its various forms of suffering are our choices and consequent actions. What is karma? The Buddha said, karma is intention and the result of intention. As long as our intentions of Dharma practice remain untransformed, we only settle for more of the suffering of samsara, for life in the same old cage. Through attention to these themes, we come to understand that to practice the Dharma with a mind that is not imbued with Dharma values is to sell the Dharma short and to settle for less than freedom. The law of karma, we're going to talk a little bit more now about what is karma. And we're going to divide it into non-virtuous deeds and the results, virtuous deeds and the results, and neutral deeds. So we'll start with non-virtuous deeds and their results. Nörtchen Khunga Zangpo said, when considering non-virtuous deeds, think about the nature of non-virtuous deeds, the result of non-virtuous deeds, and the advice on how to abandon non-virtuous deeds. First of all, the nature of non-virtuous deeds is simply the 10 non-virtuous acts that we've talked about lots of times: killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, idle speech, harsh speech, divisive speech, coveting, ill will, and wrong views. Again, in the Beautiful Ornament of Three Vision, there's extensive discussion of all of those topics if somebody wants to go into that more. Essentially, that's the nature of non-virtue. The result of non-virtuous deeds, Nörtchen Khunga Zangpo said, corresponding to each of the 10 non-virtuous deeds, in the present life you will meet with such results as having a short life, being poor, making enemies with your own spouse, being criticized and slandered, being in discord with your friends, hearing unpleasant news, not being believed by others who say that whatever you say is unauthoritative and nonsense, not being able to fulfill your wishes, meeting with great fear, and possessing false, wrong views. The results of non-virtuous deeds that will befall you in a future life depend upon the amount of non-virtuous deeds that you have performed. Therefore, by having indulged in a small amount of non-virtuous deeds, you'll be born in the animal realm. By having performed a fair amount, you'll be born in the realm of hungry ghosts. And by having done a great amount, you will take birth in the hells. Finally, he said, think about the advice on how to abandon non-virtuous deeds. And that's simply just to apply the antidotes. For example, the antidote to killing is to save lives. The antidote to gossip would be something like reciting mantras. And the antidote to maliciousness would be developing loving kindness, and so on and so forth. So you just simply apply the antidote. His Eminence Asanga Rinpoche said, since life is impermanent, before death, I should abandon all non-virtue and accomplish as much good as possible. Non-virtue causes unpleasant rebirths. Ponder the results of each negative deed, because it's difficult to get out of the lower realms. Negative deeds produce the tendency to repeat those deeds. Negative deeds produce bad environments. Negative deeds produce a body that smells bad and causes people to fear you. And negative deeds produce not being loved. Good deeds produce rebirth in a higher realm, long life, abundance, trust from people, a good environment, and people feeling good around you. Overcoming negativity is slow. The way to do it is to keep track of your thoughts. Notice right thoughts when they arise, and notice bad thoughts when they arise, and say, this is not good for me. And also they can bring harm to those that I love and others too. Notice your good thoughts and continue to keep them. We are used to letting our mind chase after thoughts. We let our thoughts run without examining them. So at least before you go to bed, examine the previous day's thoughts. It's beneficial. That's what Asanga Rinpoche said. So now we're going to talk about virtuous deeds and their results. Nörtchen Kunga Zangpo said, when considering virtuous deeds, think about the nature of virtuous actions, the result of virtuous deeds, and the advice on how to accomplish them. So first, the nature. Having abandoned the 10 non-virtuous deeds, as explained above, you should accomplish the 10 virtuous deeds as much as possible, based on a motive that is devoid of desire, hatred, or ignorance. Next, corresponding to each of the 10 virtuous deeds, temporarily in this life, you will meet with such results as having a long life, being very rich, being in accord and harmony with your spouse, obtaining fame in every direction, being on good terms with your friends, having sound organs such as speech and so on, others believing whatever you say, accomplishing your wishes, being free from fear, and possessing pure right views. The final result of the 10 virtuous actions that will befall you depends on the amount that you have performed. Therefore, by having performed a small, fair, or great amount of virtue, you will obtain the results of either a Shravaka, a Pratyeka Buddha, or unsurpassable enlightenment. And finally, think about the advice on how to accomplish virtue. Since you are able to gain any of the three types of enlightenment by the performance of the 10 virtuous deeds, and since even through attainment of the stage of a Shravaka, you are liberated from the fears of the lower realms and samsara, why would you not contemplate accomplishing virtue? Now, I'll just make a note here to just explain what is a Shravaka, what is a Pratyeka Buddha, and what is unsurpassable enlightenment, just briefly, okay? And again, there's a great deal of discussion about this in the Beautiful Ermine and the Three Visions, but briefly, we can divide the Buddha's path into two divisions. Well, we can divide it a lot of ways, but we can divide it into two divisions, the foundation path and the great vehicle path. Here, the foundation path is divided into Shravaka and Pratyeka Buddha. Shravaka is sometimes translated as hearer. Yeah, someone who heard the words of the Buddha and practiced them. Pratyeka Buddha is sometimes translated as solitary realizer, and that's a person who has heard the words of the Buddha and practiced them, but only has one more lifetime to accomplish them, and they don't need any more teachings. And so they are solitary, they practice alone. However, it's a foundation path, so they don't have what we would call bodhicitta or enlightenment thought, which is what the Mahayana or the greater vehicle has. In other words, the foundation path is essentially practicing for yourself without worrying too much about all sentient beings, which of course in the Mahayana great vehicle, that's the main focus, is the whole point is practicing for the benefit of all beings. So you have this kind of division. So the result of the Shravaka path is nirvana, or liberation, or freedom from suffering, freedom of samsara. In other words, they're out of the cycle of cyclic existence, but they're not fully and completely enlightened, which is the result of the Mahayana great vehicle path. The Pratyeka Buddha, or the solitary realizer, is kind of in between in a way. They have mostly the motivation to practice for themselves, a little bit the motivation to practice for others, but not completely like the Mahayana great vehicle bodhisattvas have. So that result is perfect enlightenment. So you have liberation on one side and you have enlightenment on the other side. Their two endpoints are different. But in either case, you're free of suffering. In either case, you're out of cyclic existence. So even if you're on the Shravaka path, Nörtchen Khunga Zangbo says, why wouldn't you practice virtue? Because you're going to be free from suffering. So that's a little explanation of that terminology and what it refers to. There's a lot more to that discussion, but that's briefly. His Eminence Choge Trichen Rinpoche said, any experience of suffering we undergo is linked to non-virtuous deeds that we have enacted elsewhere in the past. It's necessary to reverse our karmic pattern of accumulating negative deeds. And we do this by increasing our store of positive actions, merit, and thereby neutralizing and transforming our repository of negative actions. Be confident in the law of cause and result. Whatever you do, your good deeds will be excellent causes of happiness. Since your wrongful actions create the causes of unhappiness, then that is what you will experience. It's necessary that we learn to discern this relationship between causes and inevitable results. And through this, we learn to restrain ourselves from the cultivation of negative causes, and in turn, to create fortunate causes through wholesome deeds. So that's positive and negative, and now we're going to talk about neutral deeds. Nörtchen Kungazangpo said, neutral deeds are those deeds that are performed indifferently, with neither a virtuous nor a non-virtuous motive. For example, eating or doing handicrafts and things like that. The result of such deeds is neutral in the sense that they are not able to bring about either happiness or suffering, but they only create the tendency to repeatedly perform the same type of activity, such as handicraft work. Actions of this sort should be transformed into virtuous actions. By the power of your motive, you can change a neutral deed into a virtuous one. For example, think that you're eating food in order to strengthen the body so that you can properly listen to, contemplate, and meditate on the Holy Dharma. In Sakya Pandita's Clarifying the Sage's Intent, there's many, many examples of how to do this. There's literally pages of examples. So, for example, when you're walking, you can think, may all beings travel the path to enlightenment. And that changes it from a neutral action into a positive action. Or when you're turning on a light, you can think, may all beings attain enlightenment. So our day is full of these, you know, neutral, most of what we do actually probably neutral, but we can change all of those by our motivation. And there's all kinds of creative ways of doing that, and if you need some ideas on how to do that, read Clarifying the Sage's Intent. His Eminence Chogyam Trichen Rinpoche said, until you can effectively change the pattern of your actions, words, and thoughts, by acquiring insight into this teaching of the law of cause and effect, you will not gain much genuine realization of the shortcomings of samsara. This is a key point. The only way you can gain this kind of realization is to understand what must be adopted and what must be abandoned or renounced. All of these contemplations are meant to lead us to the knowledge that the nature of worldly existence is unsatisfactory. All realms of existence, from the highest of the gods down to the lowest of the hell realms, partake of one, two, if not all three, of the general types of suffering. We need to sincerely reflect and meditate on the nature of these three types of suffering, using the examples that we've been given, in order to develop a steadfast sense of renunciation. And if one learns to abandon attachment and clinging to worldly existence and its endless activities, one will be able to go beyond the sorrowful and woeful nature of the world. If one has no attachment to worldly activities, to this life, or even to this existence, it becomes possible to pass beyond sorrow to nirvana, where all inner foes have been destroyed. To go beyond sorrow means to be free from afflictive emotions, the inner enemies that lie hidden in our being. Letting go of attachment, clinging, and fixation enables us to reach, at last, a state beyond suffering. So, summary. The first two lines of Parting from the Four Attachments summarize what are called the four thoughts that turn the mind towards the Dharma. Precious human rebirth, death and impermanence, the suffering of cyclic existence, and the law of karma or cause and effect. And that completes the explanation of the second line of the teaching of the parting from the four attachments. Any questions about all that?
Where do you bring in the prospect of prosperity?
Where do you bring it in? You mean...
Because one of the things we all aspire towards and have desire to be prosperous.
Uh-huh. Well, then,
when you meant, is it a part of the virtue or is it in a different category?
It's a result of virtue. It's a result of generosity, practice with the three special, what did we call them? The three special characteristics. Abundance is the result. Generosity is the virtue. Yeah? If you do the six perfections, it's the first one, generosity. And there's a reason it's the first one. The six perfections go in a deliberate order. And basically the reason is the six perfections are the practices of the Mahayana, the great vehicle. And if you don't have generosity, you can't be a bodhisattva. The whole thing is to do it for others, right? And it's to be generous, it's to be giving. So that's the fundamental first quality that we need to have. One of the results, we don't do it for the result, but one of the sort of side effects, if you will, is abundance.
That's the how part. How it's generosity that does it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the connection.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah. All of these virtuous actions have, I don't know if side effects is the right way to phrase it, but they have benefits to us, even though that's not our main motivation. It still, you know, comes back to us good. It comes back to us, because it's karma. Karma comes back, right? Even though that's not our main motivation, our motivation is to benefit others. And that's what they call sometimes the two benefits. Sometimes you'll see that written, that this accomplishes the two benefits. Well, what are the two benefits? Benefit for others, but also benefit for me, you know. If we do it for all sentient beings, I'm a sentient being. I get the result too. But that's one of the distinctions between the foundation path and the great vehicle path, is what's our motivation, you know. So if you're in the great vehicle, you want to have the motivation of benefiting all other beings. But that doesn't mean we're left out. We get the ultimate benefit of enlightenment, but we also, in the meantime, get the temporary benefits, in this case, of abundance.
Thank you.
It's good to know. It's not like we have to, you know, self-sacrifice and... No. It's everybody's in the same boat. But your motivation determines the end result.
The connection that you made with generosity is really a key factor.
Yeah. But you want to always seal it with those three special parts we talked about. Your motivation, emptiness, and dedication. Otherwise, it's just ordinary generosity and ordinary virtue, which is good and fine, but it doesn't produce the final result that we're aiming for, which is enlightenment. Other questions? Okay, so that's listening and some contemplation, and now we get to do the meditation part on this subject. So we can find a posture that we're comfortable with and just let our mind relax for a moment. And we can think about the commentaries that we heard tonight on the law of karma. And the results that come from our good actions and our bad actions. And the results that we experience do not come from outside of us. We create them ourselves. We need to remember the importance of distinguishing what is virtue and what is non-virtue. And having already contemplated the faults of samsara and developing renunciation, we can then bring mindfulness to our daily activities, body, speech, and mind, and examine, are they virtuous or are they non-virtuous? And have a strong resolve to never commit non-virtue. And to always strive towards virtue. And also to observe our neutral activities and change them into virtue by having a virtuous motivation, thinking to benefit all sentient beings. And really, it's as simple as that. We don't have to make it complicated and difficult, but we do need to be mindful. Let's say the dedication prayer now. So non de don jazi bani O non ye pe don am bun je te Ke gana ji bun tru ke yi Sid pe tso
Dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment.
Thank you.
Thank you.